This week at school, the children have been making cards for today, and we had a shop where children could go and buy presents. I was asked to chat to a child that had become really distressed about this, about the whole prospect, total meltdown. And it turns out that the child didn't want to give the present to his mum, but to his dad, because dad was the one that did what mums did for him. For some children and adults up and down the country today, today is a really difficult one. However, the Bible doesn't make out mothering to be fluffy. One of the first things to observe about these stories is how unsentimental they are. They aren't fluffy stories making out that mothering is something very twee. These four biblical stories all involve pain and disruption. Behind the story of Moses in the bulrushes is the fear that if the child's true race and identity was found out, the child's life would be in danger. What a decision for his mother. Can you even begin to imagine the desperation behind her actions? Knowing what she was doing was her only option that her son had if he was going to live. She stepped out in faith. Behind the joy of Hannah is many years of childlessness. But alongside that is what Hannah did with the answer to that prayer. This was to give her son back to God. She was passionate, generous, sacrificial, brave, joyful, trusting and faithful. The reading from Luke is put into the mix, and we hear Simeon praising God for Jesus, to whom he was actually holding in his arms. A moment of rejoicing and comfort for his parents. Then Simeon offered Mary a prophecy of pain. That prophecy is fulfilled in John 19, as we see Mary standing at the foot of the cross with the beloved disciple as her son is executed as a common criminal. Mothering is all these things and more, but it doesn't have to be done by the mother, and you don't have to have children to be able to show mothering. And actually, you don't have to be a woman, as the child at school rightly pointed out. We can all be mothering. And we all need someone to look out for us, to defend us, to protect us, and especially as Christians, to help each other to learn our purpose in life, to model trust, faith and joy. Encourage each other, step out in obedience to God's call, and model that as well. But stand alongside each other when life gets tough, the anxieties and the struggles kick in. As I said, these stories present a challenge to us, and we're going to think about what it is that perhaps they may challenge us too. They are honest about the struggles facing parents and children and those longing to be parents. Obviously, life is different, but the struggles are the same. Do we as individuals and a church help people to be honest about those struggles? Or do we encourage people to keep up appearances and hide their struggles behind a veil of perfectionism? How can we support one another honestly and generously in the struggles and joys of family life? Are we being real as a church community, so we can have real conversations with the people we come across, the people who bring their children to the groups we have during the week? We find more and more at school that we are having conversations with parents about the struggles. And that's the same in other schools in the town, and it must be mirrored up and down the country as well. Now, without being really political, this is the changing face of teaching and the knock-on effect of social changes in our societies. The thresholds in the past where families would have been supported by outside agencies has changed, and it's relied upon schools to bridge that gap. But this isn't just for schools to bridge the gaps in the community, but for us as well. Years ago, it was the churches that bridged the gaps. But what happened? As you may be aware, I'm the community pastor for the schoolroom at Woodham Ferris, and I've been looking back at the history of the chapel. Now, the schoolroom part was actually built in the chapel around 1844, and it was actually to educate the children of the village. But reading further into it, the church looked after a lot of the social needs the children and the families had as well. Have we lost touch with society that we live in? Are we being real with the families we are meeting each week, with the various groups? Are we saying to the new mum, it's draining having this little person demanding your attention 24/7, or do we say it will just pass? Do we acknowledge that often when you have a child, it feels like you lose a bit of your identity as well? Are we acknowledging the fact with our teenagers there's a drug problem in our town? I was shocked when Kieran came home and told me there was a man on the bus dealing drugs. I did say to him, how do you know? And he goes, Mum, but I'm glad he came home and told me about it. There are alcohol problems. Paul has been into Willie D with the YMCA, teaching about alcohol awareness. There's domestic abuse. The lady from Women's Aid said that South Woodham and Woodham Ferris are places where it happens, but stay behind closed doors because people feel they have to keep up that veil of perfectionism. Willie D, Year 8s, will be having a talk on knife crime and gang-related incidents at school. It's actually postponed from this week, but it's going to be happening again soon. Irrelevant, you may think. But there was an incident at the railway station earlier in the year involving gangs. Perhaps it's the bigger things that are easier to acknowledge, but there are the little bits as well. We were all teenagers, children once. We all know the things we did ourselves, struggled with, and the unwise decisions we made. So why do we try and hide it and make out that everything is perfect? Jesus understood the imperfections. He showed us what we as followers of his word need to do. Jesus got into the messiness alongside people. He wasn't looking for perfectionism. Why? Because it's not healthy. But we live in a society where the show of perfectionism has become part of our culture. At the women's conference last week, seems like ages ago, it was just last week in Shoebury, the value of perfectionism was talked about and how social media paints a picture of perfectionism. Having to look perfect, act perfect, making out life is perfect, when often it's far from it. This actually reminded me of a TV programme, Keeping Up Appearances, with Mrs. Bucket, his neighbour, was unable to be real for the fear of getting it wrong. She was expected to keep up appearances, and you could clearly see how that affected her. We need to help people to feel real, so they can be real, and as Christians, help people explore who they are and see who God has created them to be. That requires trust, and that trust is built by relationships, like Lucia did with Punchinello in our story, not like being Mrs. Bouquet. But before Lucia was in a position to help someone else, she had to acknowledge her own imperfections, her insecurities, and keep visiting her maker. She had to work on losing her own spots and stars. And Lucia had to constantly deal with the judgment and stigmatism from others. Mrs. Bouquet had a fear that other people would judge her and stigmatise her if she didn't have the perfect facade. However, for Mary, that was a real possibility. The reality of Mary's obedience contrasts with the way outsiders might have perceived or judged her. So how do we nurture faithful, costly obedience to God's call and resist judging people's actions? When God is on your case and you commit to being entirely obedient to God, it's life-changing, as it was for Lucia and Punchinello. It's exciting and scary, and you are dealing with discovering a new person. When we step out in obedience, we see things differently. We are challenged to live life differently, and it can be the most exciting time and the most challenging time. It helps having people to walk alongside you, to give you a hug and encourage you as you keep stepping out. It's easier if we remember that God has made each one of us special and unique. God didn't make a mistake when he created you. We can often be our own worst critics. And as we look back to Mary, we can begin to see why judgment from others would have been so unhelpful. That poor girl was having her life turned upside down by her faith and by having total obedience to God's call. people wouldn't have known the bigger picture of her obedience and the stuff God was calling her to. When she found out she was pregnant, she would have probably been judged so much. I'd imagine she questioned her actions a lot as well. The gossip around Mary would have been rife. An unmarried girl carrying someone else's child, her fiancé sticking by her, she was probably judged at every level. And then her poor fiancé Joseph had to get his head around it as well, which would have added another lot of anxieties onto Mary. We are told again and again against judgment. Judgment belongs to God, and Jesus made his views clear on human judgment publicly in Matthew 7, verses 1 to 5, where he says, "Do not judge others, and you will not be judged, for you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? How can you think of saying to your friend, 'Let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye,' when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye." When I was writing this, I decided that I'd look up the word judge, as you do. So I looked to the original Greek meaning. And the original Greek word to judge is dikaino. And it's a lot more gentle than Western culture definitions of it. Judgment is almost always distorted and destructive. It's distorted because we can't see what God sees, and judgment belongs to him, as I read earlier in Matthew 7. It's destructive because it almost never helps the person who is the subject of our judgment. So if we want to be faithful and obedient like Mary, and we want to be able to explore that call, we mustn't judge in Western terms, but walk alongside people and help them discern the path that is having the light shone on it. There is always issues to deal with, but discerning together, exercised well, is helpful and restorative. And that's actually closer to the original Greek meaning. There's a song I really like by Brandon Heath. It's one I've played by before, and it's Open My Eyes, and it's about this guy that's sitting in, it's either a railway station or an airport, and you see him see the world in one way. And the song goes on, and he asks to see the world in God's eyes, and he sees a completely different view of what's going on. And the chorus says, "Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your love for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see." So perhaps before casting judgment or trying to stigmatize someone, we pause to ask ourselves, what is it God is actually seeing? In the case of Mary and Joseph, what do we see? Mary and Joseph's life was difficult. Jesus was born as a refugee, and they lived under a violent occupying power. The story of this family opens our eyes to the plight of refugees and those living with persecution and violence in our own day. We've been exploring these issues recently through Justice Matters, BMS Dignity Project, and through various sermon series. And we need to continue to keep ourselves up to date with what's going on around us, so we don't see the world through a veil of perfectionism. We've seen a lot in the news this week about the situation in the refugee camp in Calais. And it doesn't matter what our own personal political opinion about it is, but we can pray that we have the same view that God would be seeing. And we must pray that God's will be done in the places where there's persecution and violence. God understands. His own son experienced violence and persecution. Imagine if people had had God's eyes then. Finally, this morning's readings ended with John 19, where we heard that Jesus presented his mum to the disciple whom he loved, saying, "Dear woman, here is your son." And he said to this disciple, "Here is your mother." And from then on in, this disciple took her into his home. This all happened at the foot of the cross. a new family was formed. Jesus teaches us that the community of his disciples need to have the same spirit of mutual care and concern. Jesus, right in the middle of this turmoil, turns his thoughts to this new family. He's inviting us to acknowledge a responsibility for one another, us as being part of this new family. Jesus doesn't paint a veil of perfectionism. The new family is formed in the middle of a place of great suffering. So on Mothering Sunday, we celebrate all the positives that families experience: love, happiness, and togetherness. But also remember that there might be pain, sacrifice, and loss. Being a part of God's church, we are all family under Christ, who has redeemed us from brokenness and is making us whole so we can be an example and a blessing to the world. As Christ showed his love on the cross and his compassion for his mother and his sacrifice for us all, may we know what it is to love and to be loved in words and in actions. May we reflect God's love in our families, our church, our community, so that the world can see that we are followers of Christ and children of the Most High God, and draw others into his loving care.